as time went on, because it was very shocking. I remember arguing with some of our co-workers when the war was going to end. I, of course, was elated. I was very happy. And some of the workers even expressed the concern that they weren't happy with the end of the war because it would be the end of their job. And as I say, that still shocks me when I think back on that. And I had never thought of it that way because, I figured we won't starve to death. Well, at that time we didn't because there were still vacant fields. You know, you can go pick those wild spinach and things like that. You really wouldn't starve. You could find some way to survive. There wasn't much in the way of welfare at that time, though. And people did feel more insecurity when they didn't have a steady job because there was not the cushion that we have now. You have Medi-Cal, you have welfare. That was not a real common thing at that time. And people had to depend on their own abilities to... But I never had that fear of being poor. I guess I grew up poor, and I really didn't mind it. Poor in the country is a lot different than poor in the city, and I think that's where we made the mistake of taking people away from, you know, from the farms in the country, because you could always have enough there to survive. You could always eat. You didn't have any money, but you did manage to eat, and you had fresh air and exercise and a lot of things that are real good for you. It was a different way of life. As I think I mentioned before, when people talk about the Depression, my brothers and us always said we really didn't know there was one because there was no change. We'd always been that poor, and we didn't know that we didn't really know there was a Depression because we'd always been that poor, and it really didn't, you know, it didn't bother us that much because we it wasn't any different, and it was just ordinary times for us. But I can see where people in the city, because everything is cut off. When your job is cut off, everything is cut off, and usually you are a renter, so you'd be out in the street. And whereas the poor person out in the country, as a general rule, owned their own little old shack. It wasn't much, but it did keep the rain out, and you did raise your own food. And I can remember during the Depression, there was a lot of stealing. In fact, we had turkeys and chickens. They came at night and stole the turkeys and the chickens, and we shared. I remember us sharing eggs. We had a lot of eggs. We had a lot of chickens there, and we used to share eggs with the neighbors, and they would, whatever they had, they would share with us. Poor people at that time always shared. They always came together. No, you know, it was just an accepted thing. Well, I think they called it being neighborly, which people don't have neighbors anymore. But you always shared with your neighbors, whatever you had. And at that time, it was, I think it was very necessary because I can remember there was a big family that lived close to, well, nobody lived close in those days in New Mexico, but they were called close neighbors, and they lived a mile or two, but they were close neighbors. And their father worked at a lumber company somewhere. Of course, he got laid off during the Depression, and we did, as I say, we had a lot of stuff there, and we shared our food with them, which was the way everybody did out in the world. Poor part out in the country there. But I don't think we can go backwards. I'm not too sure that we should, but I think we should take a real good look at the way the problems developed and what caused them to develop and see if we could make some, because everyone would rather. But anyway, we were talking about at Douglas, and I never felt that the job security was that important to me that I would want war to continue, so that I could get it, because most people were earning more money than they had previously, and I'm sure I was too. I really don't remember what the wage scale was, and they were not at that time. I don't believe they were taking out income tax. I think income tax came way above the level that at that time the tax was possibly more fair because I don't remember. I wish I could remember how much wages we were being paid, you know. But I do remember that there was not, I don't think there was income tax at that time, and I'm sure Social Security was very little. I don't think that there was insurance as we have it, and a lot of deductions from your checks. So I'm sure people were taking home most of what they were earning, which I guess was very appealing. But I could never, as I say, want to have a war so that I could have a job that paid more. I would much better be, on starvation as to see that. But I don't think people should have to depend. I don't think that our economy should have to depend on a war so people could have jobs. It should not be that way. And what have we done? Goodness sakes, that was more than 30 years ago, right? More than 30 years ago. That we haven't done anything, the heads, the people in charge, the decision makers, have done nothing towards providing this. And we keep the threat of war and the talk of war and wars going on here and there. And we should have outgrown that. That war is real outmoded. And yet we talk about old-fashioned and this and that. I think we've given up a lot of the old-fashioned stuff that had value, that could solve problems and produce results, but we still hang on to the concept that we have to be involved with killing people. And we want a more sophisticated method to kill people, and that's where most of our tax dollar goes, is to provide this. And I think that somewhere along the way we should be able to rearrange our thinking and our action and our what we call, you know, the economy of the United States, and provide jobs for people without, we have a housing shortage, we have air pollution, overcrowded cars, too many cars, and what are we doing about it? We just produce more and more of the same thing, more and more overcrowding, more housing costs get to the point where no one can afford them. So how is that going to solve your housing problem if the cost of producing housing, now who governs that? You know, the people that are looking for a house certainly have nothing to say about it. So I think that we should rearrange the political structure. And what's the next question?
Do you think your life would have been different or taken different directions at all if you hadn't had the experience during the war years that you had?
I suppose so. It's hard to say. It's really very hard to say. I appreciate it. I enjoyed the experience of, I've always liked to work more or less with my hands, to be more active than I had before that time. I had several, at least one or two office jobs which were very boring and confining to me, you know, just as and do the same thing. And factory work was boring in a sense that a lot of times you did the same thing over and over, which gets very monotonous. But it was a more active type of a thing which appealed to me more. Who knows? Because I stayed with us. See, I worked at Hughes for quite some time after the war. In fact, I think about 10 years, if I'm not mistaken, maybe longer, maybe there was an interval in there where I wasn't working. I don't really recall. And I always enjoyed, I enjoy working any kind of work. If I had a job digging ditches, I guess I would enjoy that too. I just like to work. And, you know, I the only thing I didn't care too much for is that I always felt like we were imprisoned there because, you know, you had to have an ID to get in, you had to have an ID permission to get out, you were very restricted to just your area of work there, but I suppose those things are necessary. It always seemed to me like we were sort of in jail. Never having been in jail, I don't know if that's the right comparison or not, but I often felt that way. And those inside those factories are dreary damn places. They never had windows. You never knew what was going on outside, you know. And, of course, the air was bad. And for that reason, but still, I enjoyed it. I stayed with it. I must have liked it. I believe it paid more. It did at that time. That type of work paid more than office work. Now, office work pays more. We got into the paper thing. Right, I guess I'm right. I worked anyway, and I was glad to have a job. I've always been glad to have some way to keep busy.
Are there things that I haven't asked you that you'd like to talk about?
Geez, I don't know what. I thought I'd covered every subject in the world. In what direction? I don't know.
Anything. I'm through with my questions, and I thought you might have something you'd like to say.
Well, just that I certainly support what you're doing, and I have enjoyed very much being with you, and I hope I've contributed. I've tried. In my limited fashion, I hope some of the things have helped. I really have enjoyed it. And I can't tell, I wish I had a good memory. That's my biggest problem that I have, I think, is never being able to remember, because I'm sure there were, you know, problems and aspects of things that happened during that time, especially at the beginning, because it was such a new thing with bringing in a lot of women. And if I remember right, you had to wear pants. And I think that was a new thing. A lot of women resented wearing the pants. It never bothered me because I never was hung up on clothes. And you had to tie up your hair. I remember that too. And of course, wear closed shoes if you worked, you know, in most of the parts of the plant, you know, unless you worked in the office part, the paperwork or something. Most of the jobs that most people took were that. And I can remember a lot of complaints and women making a lot of complaints. As I say, it didn't bother me because I didn't care what I wore anyway, but they used to, you know, like when we were gathered together at break or lunchtime, they would long to put on a dress, which I thought was very foolish, you know, and they just wished that they could wear a dress to work, which are things that are more or less important to most women, I guess. They spend a lot of time and energy on clothes and styles and things like that, which is, you know, if that's what you like. And I'm trying to think of some of the other complaints that were voiced there. Most everyone had a very patriotic attitude towards working there. And I guess a big complaint was that, you know, there weren't any fellas to date. I can remember a lot of them bemoaning that fact. But if I remember right, women used to go in groups to various types of entertainment. A group, well, they still do, I guess, my goodness. I don't think that was that different then. And I think being separated from their families, because a lot of the girls there had husbands who were overseas and in the service, and being separated from the family was a very real, everyday hurt for a lot of women. And working for the first time, trying to adjust to being away from the children was a very real and difficult thing, too, because, as I say, we used to gather together at the break time and lunch time, all discuss, and the ladies would talk about things like that. I think everyone was real concerned and very frightened, such frightened people. The time they supposedly dropped a bomb or fired a gun right here on the California coast, and people were just panic-stricken. I slept right through it. Of course, I stayed so tired. It's the story of my life, just tired. Because at one time I was working a full shift and going to school, and I really was dead all the time then. And the minute that I was not at school or work, I was in bed, and I slept. We used to dream of staying in bed, you know, sleeping as long as you wanted to sleep, as long as you needed to sleep. We used to do that. But they really were hard times. But I think in my case, I try to push the bad part. I don't dwell on it. I think you could. I don't know what you know. It's nice to remember it later on. But I'm sure there were a lot of aspects that. That I wish that would come more clear to me now, but there were problems. In fact, they developed, I think I mentioned this, maybe I didn't, they were forced to put child care centers close to the factories where the woman would. Now, I saw that come out here somewhere a few years back, that was all a new thing. That wasn't a new thing. I wasn't that involved with it because I didn't have the problem of caring for a child at that time while I was working. But some of the women did, and to encourage more women, because they needed, they had the job there, they needed more help. They did that close to the factory. They had the child care provided. It didn't last too long, or maybe the war ended, and of course that probably ended it. But that was one concept that I was hoping would continue, because it made a lot of sense. The woman only made one trip. She went to leave the child and went to her job, and then she picked the child up and came home, or the children, as the case might have been.
Did you know many women that used the child care facility?
not on a real close personal basis. I know ones that did. Now, usually I worked a night shift, so the woman with the children would have been working the day shift, unless they worked out something, you know, like we had, where, and this happened a whole lot, where you shared your one work days and one work nights, and you shared the place, you know, the bed was slept in during the day by the night worker, and they also did that with the children. They had someone there, the day worker was there at night to watch the children while you were at work. So a lot of people made that arrangement, because there was a housing shortage then too, and the reason for that, of course, was because so many people came from other states to work in the defense industry here, and there just wasn't enough housing. Of course, there wasn't a lot of building going on during wartime either. But I don't remember anyone that I had a close relationship that had the child care thing. I remember it was available there, and I'm trying to remember which factory was it available to that I was involved in. But there were problems. Then I think a lot of persons had someone in the family who, see, everyone felt very patriotic. Now, maybe nowadays your mother wouldn't think about tying herself down with your children, but at that time everyone was doing their duty as a, you know, civilian, and certainly, I certainly feel we should have been supporting the fellows, you know, that were over there getting killed, who never should have been over there getting killed in the first place, but that's beside the point. But I think that you found a lot, and as I just said, in a crisis, people came together, because I can remember running around looking for people that drank coffee to give my sugar coupons and my coffee coupons to. I went looking for them. They didn't have to ask me. And I think you had that same thing, because I didn't use either one, and I certainly didn't feel, I know, point in me having these here when somebody else wants to. And I think it was rationed very close, because a lot of people were addicted to coffee, and evidently they drank a lot of it because they did. Which there was that feeling of trying to help each other, and people were not such strangers to each other. You know, they were, you know, we're all in this thing together, sort of feeling, and which was a very good thing, because it worked out. So I'm saying that a lot of the child care problems were probably handled in the family, where on ordinary situation they wouldn't have been, because people would feel, I'm doing my patriotic duty by taking care of my daughter-in-law or my niece or somebody's children, so they can go out and work in the war. And then a lot of people did take care of children in their home for money. And then we came up with this strict licensing. And I think we have more abused and neglected children with all the rules and regulations that we go through, because you could, at that time, find a neighbor or a person who you felt you could trust with your child. And there wasn't a lot of, you know, the really good people, the ones who are not trying to make a living, you know, a big profession out of it, would not be wanting to bother with the inspections and this and that and the other. They would just take care of your kids along with theirs, which neighbors used to do that all the time anyway. I think I raised more children than the old lady that lived in the shoe. Although I only had three, I always had, you know, some child and some children living at my house or spending a lot of time at my house, sort of thing. And I think we've gotten away from that too, and I think not to the benefit of the children either, because I know a lot of places that are licensed and this, that, and the other, but your child just doesn't get what it used to get, your next-door neighbor. First of all, they know your child, they know you, and there's a concern there that you wouldn't necessarily find among strangers. I don't know some of the other problems that... I know the women, most of them were very lonely people, very lonely. Some of them used to sit and cry at work. Well, I understand the ones crying with their husbands during the service. But a lot of the others, because they came over here away from their families and they went to a strange place. And big cities are cold places, no matter what. And there were a lot of very sad women. Can you suggest any other aspect that I haven't touched on that I might be able to remember something?
Were you sad?
No, I've always been able to adjust. I'm sure I was. I worried a lot. If I allowed myself to, I worried about a lot about my brothers. I had three brothers, and they were all stayed right in the midst of the whole bit. I don't know. None of them were hurt to any degree. all three of them came back, which we were very grateful, but I had a lot of close friends, you know, and relatives that didn't come back. So that, I think that's always in your mind, no matter what you're doing, the fact that, and you knew quite naturally that your mother was very worried about it. But I don't know, people kind of clung together more, and I think everybody tried to keep everybody else's mind off of the, you know, dwelling on it, because you could just sit around there and go to pieces worrying about what might happen, and it certainly might, and it wasn't, you know, it wasn't unfounded in any way. And, you know, how long would it last, and what would happen, and this and that, but I, maybe after, I don't know, I don't think people ever adjust to that, though. Maybe you do to a degree, you accept it to a degree, and you realize that you're going to have to carry on and move forward, and so you do the best that you can, whatever way that you can, but as I remember, if you just let yourself sit there and think about it, I guess fortunately we never had time to sit and think that you could, you know, it could be, and we were always a group of us together, which in a way is fortunate that the war threw people together. I think if you were by yourself, you'd spend a lot more time being depressed and thinking of what might be or what was, you know, what was maybe had already happened, because there certainly wasn't much in the way of communication. It was a very sad time, and it certainly affected a lot of people. It touched a lot of people. Just like with the hostages, I certainly feel very deeply about that, but unless there's something big comes up in the news, you just kind of put it out of your mind, and I feel for those families, and the persons that are locked up over there are never going to be the same. I think there's still that same kind of tension during a war, because you just don't know what's going to happen. And I feel these people, families of the hostages and the hostages themselves, are going through that same thing. And no way you can say that it doesn't affect you emotionally, because you're always on edge. You just don't know. And I think you have that same situation during the war. And I really feel for those families of those hostages. And I don't feel the hostages would ever be able to forget this experience, because they just, and I think the not knowing is the hardest part of it, just keeping on edge all the time. And it's been a long time now, and I think it's such a shame that we can't find some way to bring those people home. And I still say there is a way to deal with that problem, and if somebody has to spend a little bit of money, our government wastes enough do that. You don't put these human beings through that torture. You see, money comes first in our society, and people should always come first. Humanity should come first. Humanity is the base of civilization, not money. But we have more and more, I think, we become the money is the concern, and that's why we're able to go out in the street and just murder people so casually, because that attitude is handed down from the top, that people don't matter, it is money that matters. So if we kill you to get your money, we're only living in the modern times. We're only doing the way that society is set up at this time to function, which is money first, and people are not important. And I relate the feeling of that people are not important or less important to the abortion issue. Now, I may be completely wrong there, too. I don't myself condone abortion, although I would never, if they put it to vote, if anybody wants to, you know, whoever wants to get an abortion, that's certainly their own thing. But I feel, and you notice that in countries, well, especially Mexico, where they, it's a Catholic country, and abortion is supposed to be illegal, but they have more abortions in that country than, you know, birth control is illegal over there, but abortions are not, or they're, it's not enforced. They have a lot of abortions. In fact, you know, people here used to go over there to get their abortions before we ever legalized it here. I think it should be legalized, but I think when it becomes a real common thing, that we lose the concern that that is life. That is life. It really is. And that we're taking life. And when we get, the attitude becomes, you know, because the old-fashioned thing, and I don't think it's bad at all, is that, you know, the pregnant woman is so sacred because she has this life. She's producing life, which is very important. The world would not survive without producing life. And I want to tie that to abortion. Now, I don't know whether it's just my deep feelings, my own personal deep feelings about abortion. As I say, I would never fight anyone that won't wish to have an abortion. I think it has to be a personal thing. But I think when we make it such a national issue, and I don't see why it couldn't stay a personal thing without becoming, like in the presidential. Now, that was a real issue. It should never have been. It is a personal thing. I don't want an abortion. I don't have to have one. If you want one, it should be your right to have one. I shouldn't dictate, nor should the law dictate to what you're going to do personally. And I think when we want to make it, it changes people's attitude towards the sacredness of life, to me, is my concern with it. And as I say, whatever happened, of course everybody says, sure, it's easy for me to talk, because I know damn good and well I'm not ever going to need one, you know, at my age, you know what I'd be doing with an abortion. But I've always felt the same way. I thought, you know, if I became pregnant, I would have the baby no matter what, unless there were a big medical thing that they could talk me out of it. But I have always had the same feeling, and it isn't something that I developed after I couldn't have a child. I wouldn't be that false, but I would never get in anybody else's way who wanted to have an abortion. That, you know, that's, like I say, I respect everybody's religion. I don't care how you practice it or what it is. I think you have a right to that, and I don't make fun of, you know, if you want to sit on a rug and face the east and chant, that's just important to me. I would not disturb you any more than I would disturb anyone in the middle of taking communion, you know, in another church. Or feel any different about it. That's your religion, you're entitled to it, and you practice it. But I don't think that should be governed by laws. I don't think there should need to be a law to say that you can practice any religion. And I would hope that we would never make abortion a presidential election issue, because that's wrong. People become, idiotic, I think. They're not thinking clear, they don't see issues, and it should never be an issue in any political race. Should abortion be the issue? Now, it should not. That could be taken care of. I don't know where we ever got all the laws against abortion, because they only resulted. Now, I'm saying that there should never have been a law against it in the first place. That it should be a personal thing, and between you and the doctor, and you go find a doctor that's competent, because I go back to when there's a lot of maimed-up women from, what they used to call hat-pin abortions. And that was a very wrong thing, too. But solve the problem, did we? And I think we made abortion too available. And when we start talking about, if you're responsible to decide whether you have an abortion or not, you're responsible to decide whether you get pregnant in the first place or not. And you can, now somebody was telling me, and this is fact from a person that works in a clinic, that they had a 12-year-old girl in there for her second abortion without her parents' consent. Now, what kind of help is this 12-year-old girl going to have with two abortions at 12 years old? Now, I agree, a 12-year-old girl should not be getting pregnant. If she does get pregnant, I'm not going to say she should have the baby, because I think that would be just about as traumatic as the abortion. But abortion should not be so liberal that this child feels that she can just go back. Now, this was without the parents' consent, which I think the parents should be aware of that, because we're talking about 12 years old now. We're not talking about an adult who can make their own decisions. We're talking about a 12-year-old child, that the parents should be aware that that their 12-year-old daughter is on her second abortion. And at 12, there's nothing up there to govern her from going back for the third and the fourth. Now, what's happening to her health? Now, I think we've overlooked that with abortion. A woman's body can only stand so many abortions. I think we're all aware of that. So getting an abortion should still be a personal, and I think that we should make it more of a health issue than a moral issue, because moral is what you believe. If it's not, you know, if you don't feel that it's, if it's not a moral issue to you. But I think that we should start now, especially with the very young, that you can only, your body can only stand, and if you're going to start having abortions at 12, I doubt if you would ever be able to produce children when you got to a mature age where you would have sense enough to know that you wanted to have a child. And I think that we fail out and that we don't